almost our culture.
Yes, that's what it is.
Not what I was about to say, whatever the heck that was. Culture, Current Events, Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. We are going to talk to Father Thomas Loya this afternoon, taperlife.org. Always great conversations with Father Tom. I invite you to check out his materials and more of what he's all about at his website, taperlife.org. Also, McDonald's now introducing the delivery, which I think it's time for me to have a cottage industry building drone chutes on homes where the drone just flies over, drops it all down. I'm going to start working on that. I'll sketch it out. I may do it on the breaks of the show. I might just put it on the Bev napkin. Right? That's where all the bazillion-dollar ideas start, apparently, on the beverage napkin. I'll sketch it out there. You got it. If you can get a sketch on a beverage napkin and then get it to a patent office and then get that thing going, that's all it takes. That's it. Plain and simple. Post-it note. Maybe just a post-it note. Russia, maybe some retaliation from the Obama administration. We'll talk about that. And fake news getting censored by Facebook. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loya joins us once a week, taberlife.org, his website. Find everything that Father has going on there. Father, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Good. Very good, Leo.
We're close to the big day, and always when Christmas rolls around, there's something that could be at least somewhat perceived as an attack or a war on Christmas, or some kind of singling out the Christian faith as being insensitive. You name it. There's a lot of things in this dynamic, and you want to talk a little bit about that?
Because it comes up every year now, especially in recent years. And it falls into this it falls into the theology of the body paradigm that I like to use, because what it is, Leo, is, and there's a couple of points I want to make about it, as I reflect on it myself, how do we respond to this, these attacks? And the attacks are largely coming from wanting to remove the symbols, the physical expressions mm-hmm. of Christmas. And this, again, comes to the whole theology of the body thing of, that the just as the human person, our bodies make visible what is invisible. There's an inherent incarnational dimension of our faith where invisible things are made visible, made real. We enter into invisible realities by way of physical things. So we do need symbols, and symbols are not just symbols. Symbols actually, they're like mediators. They enter us into that reality that they symbolize. Mm-hmm. And so we do need symbols because symbols affirm the incarnation. This was the whole controversy of iconoclast period where they said, well, look, if God became an image, if the invisible God became physical to us, visible, then it means we can, in fact, make images, because he himself became an image of his Father, the image of a living God. And so we need those things. However, because I'm examining myself, too, in this whole thing, Leo, I think to myself, why am I not more angry or activist about these seemingly, anti-Christian things that come up during Christmas? And what I've arrived at in myself, and I pass on to listeners, is that as much as I am a promoter, of course, especially from my art background, theology of the body background, my Byzantine Catholic background, that I'm all about imagery, incarnating invisible realities through imagery, through physical things, mm-hmm. It's art, architecture. Although I'm completely committed to that, at the same time, I realize that, and I think we have to, as Christians, have to realize that you can't take Christmas, so-called, you know, you can't take the Christ event away from us or away from the reality of it by simply telling us, well, okay, you can't put a symbol of Christmas in a public place, and we get all upset about that. We don't really have to put it in a public place, you know. We need the symbols and the incarnational symbols, but they can be done in a way that, it's not a big deal for me. Would I like to see major scenes all that in town squares? Yeah, I'd like to. But the fact that we get this opposition to it, I know it's an anti-Christian opposition, but at the same time, it's not like really taking – I guess what I'm saying is that we tend to associate maybe too much the decoration, the symbol, with the reality, because that reality doesn't have to be in the public square. It could be in our homes, in our churches. It could be elsewhere, and draw us into the reality of Christ. But the reality of Christmas goes even beyond the imagery. You know, you can't take away what's in our heart. You can't take away the incarnational fact that it happened. You can't take away from the incarnation, living the Christ, living the Christmas event. So I'm kind of like, for instance, there was an example of a cross was on top of a Christmas tree. This was in Indiana, not far from me. And they mayor under pressure from like apparently one ACLU person, so he takes the cross down. Well, the town exploded. All these people are making crosses. They're standing at street corners. They're handing crosses out to everybody. They're cross. They run Fox News about talking about it. Well, okay, is that really? Is that really witnessing our faith? You know, is it really what our faith is about? Is it, okay, so you took the cross off the tree. The tree is still there. You took the cross off the tree. But are we about, you know, just the symbol in a way where we're acting as though if you take our symbol away, somehow you've taken the reality away. Even though the symbol helps draw us into the reality, if you take it away from certain public spheres, that somehow is really encroaching or taking away the reality itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we have to be careful and rethink that, because then we end up witnessing more to the symbol than to the reality.
Yeah. You know,
the symbol becomes almost like a false god. It becomes almost the point of it, you know.
And I would say more than almost. I would say it does become that, right? I mean, really, that's kind of what we're dealing with here. And, you know, if we think about what Christmas really is, it's the celebration of the incarnation, like you say, then our role really should be the imitation of that incarnation, which should be everyday life of a Catholic, a Christian. This should be what we do. Nothing should change regardless of whether we've got a nativity scene or we get a Christmas tree or we don't. None of that matters, really. What matters is how do we behave incarnationally, which would mean that we would imitate Christ. We would attempt to, in the midst of those who have a problem with whatever we represent, we love them. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
We serve them. We heal them. We help them. And that's the incarnational reality, is that that's what we're called to. But you're right, Father. I don't think it's almost. I think that we get to the point of a bizarre sort of idolism, idolatry, right? That comes along with this symbolism that we think that this is what it's about, to the point that it's the forest and the trees scenario.
You know, there's a part of me, and hopefully the listeners, I can only get away with this on Breadbox Media, there's a part of me, and here I am, a priest dedicated to symbols on it, there's a part of me that almost is kind of welcoming some of this, because because it's like you said, it's like forcing us to turn our gaze back to what it's really about.
Yeah.
You know, back off on a little bit on this insistence that, golly, you got to put the symbol everywhere. It's got to be in the public place. And so it's not. They want to take it away from us. Okay, well then, now that kind of forces our gaze back more to what it is, what it's about. It's about the incarnation. You know, I don't even really like to even use the word Christmas, all due respect. Mm-hmm. I like to use the word incarnation, because incarnation was what? It's about God coming to becoming his own creation, to renew it, to change it, to elevate it. So we should walk around as you're saying, as elevated people, changed people, renewed people. That would be living the, you know, if someone says, okay, we don't want to look at this manger scene in a public place. I say, okay, very well. All right. We certainly have it in our homes and our churches, and you can't take it away from there, and we'll enjoy it there. But, you know, you can take it away from the public square. It doesn't do anything to stop the incarnation.
Yeah. You can't stop it. It's already happened, right? You can't stop that. Well, you know, I think it's interesting, Father. We look at nine English-speaking cultures. The majority, and I may be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure the majority refers to Christmas as the Nativity, not Christmas, right?
Yes.
So there's something you think about just simply referring to this as the Nativity, that in and of itself is so incarnational in language, right? That this is this is the birth of Christ. This is what we're celebrating. I think, you know, at times we can even confuse that as English speakers, because we think it's all about, you know, this kingly Christ. You know, it's almost like the risen Christ, but it's not. It's this beautiful, quiet incarnation, infancy, this nativity, this native nature of what Christ brings into our hearts and lives, which then we should model. You know, I mean, if we started seeing things like that, you know, we would be like the, what I hear you saying, Father, we'd be like the Who's in Whoville, right? Let the Grinch steal the stuff.
Let him
steal the stuff. The joy is in our heart, and the incarnation is in our heart. We're going to live it out.
Is exactly what I'm saying. And sure, I don't like any affront or attack on Christianity, but when it comes to this particular issue, and I've thought and prayed about this for the last several years, because maybe there's something wrong with me. Why of all people?
Why are you not offended
about this? And that's what I've come to in my own heart and soul. That's why I pass on to listeners that I have to understand, I am a man of the incarnation. I'm a man of imagery. I'm an artist, you know, I'm a Byzantine artist, you know.
Exactly.
It's all about imagery. But I realize that the imagery draws us into the reality, but it's not the reality itself. We live the reality, and we can still have our imagery in the places that matter most. It's in our homes, our heart, our churches. Yeah. The fact that it's not allowed on a public square, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I'd prefer if it could be, but I'm not going to go. I don't think it should be what we should be going to war over. I think we should much more like, oh, okay, it bothers you. All right, as long as, you know, you can't take it out of my home or my church, you know.
Or my heart, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Okay.
Hey, Father, we're getting close to break. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more in just a moment. Father Thomas Loya is with us this afternoon, TaborLife.org. We'll have more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
If you like what you're hearing, become a friend of the show. Visit RedboxMedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loya with us, Tabor Life, welcome back.
Thank you, Leo. Always good to be here.
We were talking on the break a little bit about exploring this idea a little bit more when it comes to the iconography, the challenges that are there. We get the emphasis out of place, even to the point, and I've been reading a lot recently, Father Richard Rohr, several of his books, which I've just really fallen in love with this concept of, because it's you know, I have to say, Father, I feel like there was a kind of a smallness about my faith life and about my understanding even of my own relationship with God, with the Trinity, with, you know, and how expansive this really is. I mean, it's like something has happened over the past, you know, I've been doing this fast since All Saints Day, and now, you know, I it's weird. It's like I don't want to stop. It's so bizarre. Like I've got, you know, my wrap up day is the celebration of Christmas. So I'm like, I've just enjoyed this fast in such a crazy way because I feel like it's just things have just enlarged for me in a way that it's like, oh my goodness, I see this picture in ways that I hadn't seen before. And you know, there's something really interesting about this concept of, you know, imitation of Christ, of really being, you know, letting that incarnational reality be who you are in this understanding that, and it's not so much about the worship, but it's about the living, right? It's not so much about the images, but it's about expression. And you know, I just think we get it all so wrong so often.
Yeah, you know, you used a key word, Leo, enlarge. Enlarge the faith. It's not about where you're, oh gosh, you're going off the rails here. You're becoming one of those liberals or whatever, New Agers now, you're rid of your war, you know. You're not. You're enlarging what you know is the faith. And this is a very important point. You know, you talk about worship and the symbols and all that. You know, Benedict XVI. Was very, it did a lot for the church in terms of liturgy. He was trying to set the church back on course in terms of liturgy. But what he said was that if everything is going correctly in worship, like at the altar there, then it will go correctly with the rest of the church. Now, what he meant by that was not something myopic. It's like what you're talking about. It means that it's, like liturgy, think of liturgy in all, you know, from the art, the architecture, the ritual, the gesture, what actually happened in the Eucharist, like the hub of the wheel. Everything goes in and out of there. So what we do in liturgy, it should we enter into that incarnation and we take that outward from the liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an integrated approach to liturgy. It's not just like, okay, let's do everything right at liturgy. Let's go back to the old way and the way it should be. And we're all rigid and strict about that. And that remains just in that little kind of box, and then it has no or really very little relevancy to the rest of our lives. You know, there isn't that engagement then. There isn't that taking what's happening at liturgy into incarnating it into the world, into the life, you know, into people's lives. Liturgy has to be very, very integrated. Liturgy informs life, and life informs liturgy.
Yeah.
And so it's think of it as like a flow in and out, not as compartmentalized. Like here's liturgy over here, we did it exactly right over here, and now let's go live life. No. They're completely integrated and completely interdependent. One flows into the next and into each other. And so when we to have the right idea of liturgy is also the right idea of life itself. You know, liturgy is life.
Yeah.
You know, we are liturgical people. You know, the human race is the only creature that by nature, and this is really what separates us from all other creatures more than anything else, we're the only creature that's liturgical. In other words, we're the only ones that can actually look at life and respond to it with a sense of offering and gratitude and charity. And we see that everywhere.
Yeah, and your dog is...
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right. No, you're good. You're talking about life, right? This is part of it.
It's an incarnation too.
Absolutely.
But understand what I mean. I'm taking like what you're saying, enlarging, like take your sense of liturgy and enlarge that.
Well,
into life.
Yeah, and Father, here's the thing. I mean, if liturgy is the work of the people, which is literally what it means, then the work of the people should look like work. It shouldn't look like worship. It should look like we're getting out there and doing something, and we are incarnating into our environments, into our sphere of influence, with ideally the love and grace and patience and willingness to enter into these dynamics of relationship and really working at getting to know people and understanding them and you know that if we realized that the formal liturgy on Sundays or daily, however often we frequent the Eucharist, is truly a fuel stop, right? This is
Yes.
a time of sacramental grace. Absolutely, it is. We're that is real. It is true. And if we understand that this is the food for the journey, as we call it, then that journey is what it's about, right? The journey is what is where we're living the incarnation. We just happen to be in in for a moment. All right, we're getting fueled up, and we're going back out there, and we're going to do this some more. And I think that unfortunately we can really get to the point where we're only living liturgically, so we think while we're in the liturgy, and there's nothing outside of that.
Exactly, you said the key word, while we're in the liturgy, then we're being liturgical. No. What we experience in liturgy animates our whole life, which is liturgical.
Yeah.
You know, you said about it's like a fuel stop. I'll make another analogy that probably only in Breadbox I get away with. I suspect that, okay, what are people like after they have, what is a husband and wife who really love each other and they have made love together?
Mm.
What are they like after that? Do they go out in the world mean? And no, don't they kind of go out with a certain glow, a certain, kind of love everybody else, suspect. I mean, I'm celibate, but I suspect that's what happens, I mean, there's a certain afterglow, isn't there?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's the same thing that happens in liturgy, in Eucharist.
Yeah.
There's the afterglow of that, as you say, that fuel stop, that mystical fuel stop, so that we go outward from there animated by what we experience in liturgy, to become liturgical people wherever we are, to make that engagement, with the poor, the downtrodden, the brokenhearted, and the joyful, and to incarnate.
Or the jerk that we encounter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need to be a jerk back, right? I mean, we can say, you're not going to offend me. And this is something else I think is interesting, because when we get into this mode, and it really is, I mean, I think you would agree with me, there's a mystical quality, of course. I mean, there should be. I mean, that's what our faith is all about. What you're talking about, the spousal embrace that is supposed to be Eucharistic, as we talked about before, the very altar is the marriage bed, and
yes,
at St. Peter's Square there's a four-poster bed baldacchino over the altar for a reason, right? It's
yes,
it's supposed to be have this understanding. If we really are allowing that to happen, we're going to have such a confidence and such a comfort. It's kind of like what you're saying. It's like, hey, as crazy as it is, as a married guy, I'm going to say this, there's something about, hey, we got it going on, right? We got it going on in our marriage. If this is what's happening in this relationship, if that's the same when it comes to the Eucharist, we're going to enter into every encounter with a confidence that says, I know who my spouse is, right? I know where my relationship is, and you're simply not going to be, you don't have to be defensive. Why do you have to be defensive in that nature? You're going to go out with this grace and this understanding that could potentially change your world, but it's got to take a shift of saying, it's kind of like what I've been saying in this fast. It's like, this is so much bigger. It's so much bigger than I've ever allowed it to live. I've let myself live, and just allowing some of this stuff to fall away. I mean, it's amazing to be able to see with fresh eyes, a faith that I've been a part of essentially for 20 some odd years and formerly as a Catholic for 15. It's like just now really starting to come alive to me. And it's like, wow, I want everybody to get this.
Yeah. Happily married people are the most productive people because they're joyful, they're happy, and they
right,
take that, what they're experiencing at home, they're taking that to the world, and when they come from the world to home, it's just like Eucharist, it's like liturgy. You process that through the love you have at home, then it goes back out again. So there's this, again, there's this integration that we have to understand. It's so much bigger than just this or that,
right.
So much bigger. And,
it's all of the above. All of the above.
Yes, all of the above, yes.
No. Well, we're running close on time here, but I think that this is really important stuff to take with us as we move through this time of the Christmas season coming up, and as we wrap up Advent. And I think that I remember a former bishop I had talking about the liturgical calendar. You're talking about being this you know, a person of liturgy in this mode of understanding it's always, it's fully encompassed, that it's never just it's never just a cycle, right? It's never just, here we go again. Here we are again. Here's another year, another cycle through. But to think about it as this spiraling upward, right? That every turn turns a little bit further on the journey. And, that's a beautiful, beautiful way of thinking about it. Just a couple of seconds, but I'll let you respond real quick.
Well, like Augustine, so ancient yet so new. The same old, but yet always so new. As a priest, the same gospel, same cycles, but yet for me, it's always new.
Amen. All right, Father, that's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour back. Thank you for being with us. McDonald's testing delivery in certain markets. Which, I think this is where everything is. It's all about convenience, delivery, quick pickup, pre-order, all of that. We're getting to this point because we're super connected now, right? So you can get the app, bam, you got it, and it's there. Soon, the drones will just be driving, just be a big chute. Just drop it in the chute, whatever, okay, shoot, everything comes down. You can just attach it to your mouth, depending on what's coming down the chute. You don't want your Amazon Tide replacement order. Don't want to get that confused. Drop that into your mouth. But McDonald's, right? Man. I love technology. I love the fact that we're doing this, that we're making things of this nature a possibility. This is beautiful. But, of course, anytime there's technology that is good, there's the bad. And, of course, this is what we see with Russia interfering with something. I don't know that we have the details yet at this point, if it was the email hack, if it was releasing certain information, influencing, it's seemed to appear, the recent election. And now the Obama administration said retaliation is to be expected. Now, we don't know what this could mean. Economic sanctions could be some sort of cyber something, according to reports, but the bottom line is, does it matter? Does that matter? Because if it's true, as it appears to be, that Russia is very warm with Donald Trump, and of course his Secretary of State pick from Exxon, super, super warm there because of the work that these guys have done together, does it really matter what kind of hand slap happens now? Is it really just more of a formality or I'm going to at least go out with some sort of response to this? I'm not sure that a lot can be done. So how much of a concern this really is, or how much of an impact, I guess I should say. Yeah, it's a concern. Of course, it's a concern. We don't want things of this nature taking place. But what kind of impact it really has, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know that it's much. But time will tell. Some, or at least one area, I guess I should say, where I do see some significant impact, and this is good, Facebook cracking down on fake news and at least trying to find a way to better vet the things that go out. I'm no fan of censorship. I think that any fake news site should be allowed to exist, even if it is fake news. But, see, Facebook isn't Google. Facebook isn't GoDaddy. Facebook is a business, and it's its own platform. If you recall, there was some controversy on the platform regarding filtering certain news to seemingly favor liberal stories over conservative, which they denied, but at the same time at least listened to the criticism. But in the end simply said, look, we're business. We choose to do what we're going to do, and we're going to do it that way, and whatever that is, but we will see if there's something wrong with our algorithms and see if there's some way that we could fix it so that you're not thinking that that's where we got some kind of cahoots going, so that we're responsible, but at the same time, still kind of said, this is our prerogative, and that's certainly what we see now, that they realize the proliferation of fake news has caused serious issues. Fortunately, the one issue in Washington, D.C. wasn't worse than what it was. But a guy walking in with an assault rifle into a pizza place because he thinks Hillary Clinton's running a child porn ring, that's a concern. So how they're going to do it exactly remains to be seen. But the only thing that concerns me, and it is the slippery slope, is that where does it end, right? Where, at what point do we say, well, it's not really fake news, but I don't like it, so maybe we shouldn't have it here. Now, if that's Facebook, that's one thing. Again, it's a private company. But if it's just getting on the Internet, I've heard me talk about net neutrality and the concerns that I have there, which, you know, this, how many things that just end up going so wrong start off with the best of intentions, right? I mean, that's how this works. We think we've got everyone's best interest at heart, and then we end up doing something so completely counter to the original intent that now the next thing you know, it's all completely out of control. I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think this is what we saw in some of the banking scandals and lending scandals that we've seen in recent years. Especially the most recent Wells Fargo scandal. I have to think that these things started off with the best of intentions. I have to think that they're like, well, you know what, we need to make some more sales. So it's not a bad thing if you're in business. You want to sell more stuff. But then if it gets to the point where you're having to falsify your own records because you need to pad your results, now you've veered severely off course. So what may start off with, hey, it's either good or it's indifferently innocuous, it really doesn't matter, it can turn before we know it, because now we've put pressure on ourselves and we're doing things differently than what we thought. That's what I think, because I have faith in the human spirit that says no one's just that diabolical, that they're going to start off with doing something that they know is bad. It's just not the way it works. You either get greedy or you get desperate, or a little bit of both, which is odd, right? That you could be greedy and desperate, but when you kind of see that you got something happening and maybe it's you're trying to make hay while the sun is shining. I don't know. But the one thing that is we've yet to see, but we could, because the FCC is now meddling in the Internet, and will we get to a point where somebody's beginning to throw weight around and make very unfortunate decisions on censorship and silencing those? Well, this happens in other countries. If somebody really doesn't want criticism and feels like criticism is unfair, or feels as if the criticism is unwarranted, and they had the ability, they had the clout to make something happen that would say that news source simply cannot exist anymore. Not that it just can't exist on this platform. Can't exist anymore. Because let's say it's an online news source, which is, what, 90%? How many print companies are launching these days? I'd say it's probably greater than 90%. And because we have this FCC meddling into the supposed net neutrality, which is all about pricing of internet services, but now they get some sort of on-off switch. Off, 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 right? What, I mean, you can just go in and turn off URLs at will because you think that it doesn't fit your criteria? That's a dangerous, dangerous thing to have happen. I don't agree with 50% at least of what's out there. But I don't want to stop it. I don't want to shut somebody down, even if I don't agree with it. I may say things like this whole Planned Parenthood thing. Oh my God, it's been a nonstop thread on my Facebook page. I may say, truly, I want to see taxpayer funding stopped. I'm not saying I want to put them out of business. If they really do have essential services for women that they need, well, let's focus on that. Let's stop the abortion. If it's only 3%, it shouldn't matter. But let's stop the government funding regardless, especially if they're doing abortion. But if they're a profitable business, why do they need taxpayer money? I don't get it. So I may say things like that, but again, I still don't want them to just go under, because any business that goes under is a detriment to the people who work there, the families who are reliant on the income of the workers, the economies of the local communities that these places are. Yeah, there's a lot of hinge here, and there's a lot of hinge on that. I don't want that to go away. I'm not saying that at all. But I do believe that there are times and places for stuff. But when you get down to this censorship, filtering fake news, the platforms that are out there, Facebook, Twitter, you name it, they can do it. They should be able to do it. They should enact ways to filter and prevent that from getting propagated, because once it gets out, it's a wildfire. So the good thing is that we're all privy to it. And I think that ideally, and then this is not necessarily, doesn't mean that something still won't get out there and someone get fooled, but I think being on the heightened alert of saying, let's check it out, right? It doesn't take long to validate news, so you can at least check that out. But even then, your darn fake news sites, let them be out there and just do no harm. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Thank you for listening. God bless.
If you like what you're hearing, become a friend of the show. Visit RedboxMedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.